part two of our annual holiday stories, including stories of pearls of wisdom, ashes, and a brass bid. Coming right up. Hello, this is Stephen DeLuque, and you've tuned in to Ears on Art, a program that is produced here at the studios of KCBX listener-supported public radio, serving southern Monterey, San Luis Obispo, and Santa Barbara counties on California's beautiful central coast. This is the 16th year of our Holiday Stories broadcast, and this time the theme is The Gift is Immaterial.
And this is co-host Krissa Hewitt. Bill Beeson, way back in 1999, came up with the idea of having local people tell their stories. His theme that year was the best handmade gift ever given or received. Fortunately, it doesn't seem to matter what topic we pick. There always seems to be some tale that fits it perfectly.
We are always surprised at how wonderful our guest storytellers are. They really pour out their hearts to pass on these lovely stories of their memories. So stay tuned. This program is no exception.
I'm Glenna Lou Shai, and I'm delighted to be back with KCBX. About 40 years ago, my own group, Solo Flight, had an office in the tower building right next to KCBX, and we even had a show on the program called The Raven Hour. So I was a poet then. I'm still a poet with 30 books, and I was the second poet laureate of San Luis Obispo City and County. I am writing prose now. This is from my memoir called The Sick Room. On the south side of the sick room by my bed, the windows opened onto the backyard. Staring out through those panes, I composed an early poem, a response to a fourth grade assignment to describe an animal. I compared kangaroos to my grandfather's long johns, which hung on the clothesline out back, flapping in the breeze. When I read the poem in school, some friends asked if they could hear it a second time. Margaret Ann timidly raised her hand and asked, "Could we hear it one more time?" Reading my poem for a third time hooked me for life and made Margaret Ann my lifetime friend. One blustery winter afternoon, I lay alone and bored, recovering from German measles. I lifted the blinds of the sick room, careful to protect my eyes. Measles could cause blindness, and there were Grandfather and Grandmother Stevens coming up the walk with my two favorite chickens, Fluffy and Donna Kay. To speed my recovery, they brought the books on the train from high and dry Nebraska, where I always felt well, to our Iowa River bottom. Grandmother knew it would cheer me to see the birds I'd watched peck their way out of their shells last summer. "Fresh eggs'll do you good." She was a natural healer. She smeared her poultice of mud on my bee stings from wading in her lily pond. Her special homemade snake oil dried our colds. Whenever I have an earache or sore throat, I put a clove of garlic in my ear, as she did. My 10th birthday, I lay in the sick room recovering from my tonsil operation. My parents brought in a surprise. Dad had fashioned a wooden easel outside in the lumberyard. The easel was triangular with a place for canvas on each side. I spent hours painting on that easel, and I have kept it all these years for my children and grandchildren. The sick room, with its fevers and its ancestral music and stories, created a chrysalis for me, a near hallucinatory state of awareness that began to emerge in words. Physical illness still has that power to transform me. When I am very ill, I see and hear more acutely. I intuit what I need to keep or discard to make a fresh start. Surrendering to sickness transcends my everyday distractions and worries the way hallucinogenic drugs must induce visions for others. I embrace dark nights of the body, feeling I'll achieve a metamorphosis of the soul and emerge stronger than when I entered. The sick room formed the story room in our house, the place of words and songs, where children snuggled together under grandmother's quilts to listen to pioneering stories, parents and grandparents reciting histories that seemed to arise from ghost worlds. It was a shelter where the dilemmas of the present were illuminated through lessons about past bravery, a place where our dreams for our future were seeded with those knowledge of our roots. I planted my first garden of lettuce seeds in a wooden box on the south-facing windowsill. My work and passions, poetry, gardening, children, my love or art, sprang from seeds planted in that room. The native loose soil still clings to my wandering feet. If people ask me what they can bring me from their travels, I say, bring me seeds. Like my pioneer ancestors, I carry seeds from one place to another in my pocket, as in olden times, sewn into the hem of my dress. You never know when you might want to plant a garden. A sower of seeds, born to tell stories, I survived the illnesses of the sick room to make words bloom. I wanted to close with a poem. Rising from sickbed. Rising from sickbed, I leave behind the nightmares, the night sweat, wind up the rancid sheet. What a fresh start the winter sun brushes in through windows newly washed by frost. No more delirious dawns, no more sleep round the clock. What a loss.
Hello, my name is Marilyn Farmer, and I have the good fortune to live in San Luis Obispo. I wanted to talk with you about gifts, and gifts can arrive any time, in unexpected places, in unexpected forms, from unexpected people, and at unexpected times. I have been blessed by parents who are wonderful people, who gave many gifts to our family, to our circles of friends, and to many strangers as well, while they were alive. Many of those gifts, amazingly, just keep on giving, and those I have realized are the real treasures. The gifts I have come to treasure most are likely to have been gifts that were passed on to them by their mothers, fathers, grandmothers, and grandfathers, and they became my good fortune and my most valuable inheritance. These gifts are not physical in nature. They do not occupy a physical space, nor only exist for a limited time. In fact, they were not even considered gifts at the time they were given. I have only come to fully appreciate their value and fully recognize these gifts later in life, after the opportunities to personally thank my parents slipped by. These gifts were proverbs, pearls of wisdom, which have been crafted and passed down for generations through many historical contexts and amazingly still impart essential guidance on how to make your way in this world. I recently started to compile these pearls of wisdom and realized there are hundreds that I know through my parents and many more from other cultures around the world that say similar things in other contexts, all passed on and fine-tuned through the centuries, sometimes traceable back to the 15th century and before. The most poignant words of wisdom I recall from my mother, which continues to expand my understanding of how to be in this world, is "It takes two to tango." Until I was 18 or so, I totally misunderstood these words, thinking she was saying, "It takes two to tangle," meaning that if I did not fight, there would be no fight. It was only later that I realized not only was the word tango not tangle, and it applied to just about any situation I might encounter. It gave me ever greater understandings of my choice to dance a particular dance or not, and I love her dearly for providing me with that pearl of wisdom. My father, while less inclined to dispense proverbs, often created his own, seemingly on the fly. My favorite pearl of wisdom from my father was when asked why he referred to newspaper comics as the financial section. He quipped that humor was the best investment one could make. There can be no greater gifts than these pearls of wisdom that ground and connect us to our ancestor wisdom and continue to give us guidance on how to be in this world. For these gifts, I will be eternally grateful.
Hi, this is Chrissy Hewitt. I live in San Luis Obispo and have had the wonderful good fortune to co-host this program for 16 years. I have always believed that I was very fortunate to be conceived and reared by Charles Sanford, Sandy, and Clara Frost, Chris Hewitt. For all that I was taught and for all that I was given, I, like pretty much every child, has had to accept that parents are not capable of doing all things. Because of my father's death when I was 8, my mother bore the brunt of bringing us up. We'll never know if or how things would have been different had my father lived longer. But turning to my mother to help with those knotty personal issues never felt like an option. It was just not her forte. For a long time, I just kept these issues to myself. There was no conscious search for someone to talk with in this manner. However, as I developed deeper friendships outside the family context, I had to find my voice in dealing with the things that surface between friends or are the doubts, fears that you uncover while you're talking with yourself a lot. In the years after she was my 8th grade home ec teacher, Betty became that first sounding board. Over the years, we came to know each other's families, parents, siblings, her husband and their kids. However, in the beginning, it was different. At 13 years my senior, she was the grown-up. I was the kid. She was the teacher. I was the student. Pretty certain that this relationship was a lopsided one at best. I knew who was doing all the taking. Sure of that, until some 20 years later. I was down in L.A. for a family visit. Betty and I have kept in regular touch, and as often happened, we had gone to lunch while I was down there. We returned to the house and pulled up to the front gate. Over the years, we had spent many hours talking in a car, and so starting a conversation at this juncture was routine. That day, I had something difficult to express. Recent circumstances had made me very grateful for our friendship, but also quite embarrassed for what I was sure had been an abundance of toleration on her part. She listened, and as I fought back my tears, she calmly said, "There's no need to thank me, Chrissa. We grew up together." That gift was a life changer. I've been fortunate to have several deep, long-lasting friendships that have been valuable for the unique ways that relationships expand our lives. I do not think that this would have happened without the solid grounding provided by my parents. Even if we could not easily talk about really personal stuff, I always knew of my mother's love, support, and guidance. Even without his physical presence, my father has never left my side. Together, their lifelong, immaterial gift gives me courage to explore, take risks, and create a life which is amazingly full. You are listening to Ears on Art here on KCBX, public radio for the California Central Coast. This is part 2 of our annual December storytelling program. This year's theme is The Gift is Immaterial, as compared to previous topics about food or actual gift-giving in a physical sense. This one certainly opened itself up for a lot of interpretation. Without any direction except for the theme, it's been intriguing to see how many of us are talking about family. We continue now with a voice that's familiar to those of you listening to Ears on Art.
Hello, I am Stephen DeLuque, co-host of Ears on Art. Last February 7th would have been my father's 100th birthday. he had passed 10 years prior at the age of 90. It had become my responsibility to be the keeper of his ashes. He had rested very peacefully in the guest room closet in a cardboard box marked Dad. I had been trying to get my siblings together so that we could divide the ashes so that each of us could decide what we wanted to do with our assigned portion. Since my father loved to travel, it was my intention to take a small container of his ashes every time I took a trip so that a part of my father would be left in as many places around the world as possible. After 10 years of trying to gather my siblings without success, I decided to take the bull by the horns. Since my father was born on the north shore of Oahu in what was then the largest city in Hawaii, Waialua, he was the first to be born outside of his parents' native country, Spain. I decided that I wanted to sprinkle my father's ashes on what would have been his 100th birthday in the city of his birth. I rented a beach house just outside of Waialua for the week of his 100th birthday and sent out announcements to all of my siblings, informing them of my plans. It turned out that getting my brothers and sisters to get organized to meet at the same place and at the same time was more of a challenge than I had imagined. In the months leading up to the trip, I saw people signing up and others dropping out. I was hoping that all of us would be able to show up with spouses in tow. As it turned out, four of us were able to attend. My eldest brother was unable to attend because of illness. My brother Mike was able to make it, but his wife Tina was stuck in West Virginia due to a new job. My sister Susan and her partner, Kent, made their way from Northern California with daughter Angie along as chaperone. Of course, Jeff and I were the hosts, so the only one left is my sister Elena. Elena has a daughter who is on the autism spectrum and completely attached to my sister. This would be the first time that Elena and Bella would have been separated for this length of time. It was an anguishing decision, but Elena decided to come. The house I had found was right on the beach, and we all settled in quickly. As the day approached, my sister Elena informed us that she had booked us all on a zipline course the morning of the 7th. Now, we're talking about a group of geezers in their late 50s to mid-60s. Most of us are not as fit as we should be, and soaring through space suspended in a harness hanging from a cable does not instill confidence. There would be 8 zip lines taking us from a mountaintop down to the base camp. Each zip had a challenge added, so that the last line saw us going upside down and backward. I am proud to say that we all made it down with enthusiasm. I just kept thinking how overjoyed our father would have been to know that he was the reason to bring us all together again. That evening, at sunset, we all gathered on the beach as close as we could get to the actual location of the house where Dad was born. We all took turns distributing the ashes. Tears were shed as we were saying goodbye to him one more time. But we all agreed that this is where our father's ashes belonged. Thanks, Dad.
This is Chrissy Hewitt with one more story to tell about one of those lifelong lessons. It was either Christmas 1954 or 1955, and I would have been almost 7 or almost 8. Definitely a year for a bicycle to be propped next to the tree. 'Twas Christmas Eve. Our ritual was to stand around the piano and sing Christmas carol after Christmas carol after Christmas carol. Over the years, my sister and I delighted at learning from memory several verses for each one. Then it was time for bed, and of course, being young, I was always asking for something to open. Didn't want to wait till morning. Mom finally gave in one year and I opened a wonderful package of new pajamas. New sleepwear became a ritual for many years thereafter. I may have been sent to bed, but who falls instantly asleep on this night? My bedroom was positioned at a 90-degree angle to the living room, with windows in each that afforded me a small view. I may, in fact, have dozed off, but was then conscious of considerable talking coming from the other room. Peering through the windows, I could tell that something was being assembled, but it did not have wheels and a bell-decorated handlebar. It was metal, but to my chagrin, it was a brass bed. Morning arrived, and the custom was to wake up our parents and then wait for all to assemble in the hallway behind the closed living room double doors. These were seldom shut, and being on the outside of this barrier only happened on Christmas morning. Before we could enter, a fire had been lit in the cavernous fireplace, and the tree and the room lights had been turned on. It was magical, and it was evident that my parents loved the moment as well, with, of course, the possible exception of the hour. This particular morning was not full of cheer for me. Act surprised, show your delight at the pretty brass bed. I believe I tried, but my snooping had ruined the day. Torn with guilt, I eventually, that morning, confessed. They knew, as they always did, that there was no need for additional punishment. I was already in plenty of pain for ruining my pleasure and theirs. For nearly 40 years, my mom stored presents in her room on the floor beyond her bed. It was certainly easy pickings for generic snooping, if so inclined. I may have explored once again, but most were already boxed by the department stores. This was good for knowing the where, but not the what. However, I had already received the lasting gift. Knowing the contents early did not bring me happiness. I'm not able to fake surprise and pleasure, and the gift giver is not fooled either. What's in the box is most certainly on a need-to-know basis, and I found out the hard way that when it comes to presents, I like secrets.
Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list, he's checking it twice. Gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He's sure when you've been bad or good. So be good, for goodness sake.
Hi, my name is Rachel Yan. I am an artist and I live in Los Osos, California. Daddy the Prankster. Always when he told my brother and me a story or wild tale, Daddy, when we least expected it, would turn into the monster or wild tiger of his story. He would snarl and growl. He would drop to his hands and knees and chase us across the room. Our response was to scream with laughter and beg for a piggyback ride. At this holiday season, I think of Daddy. His enthusiasm knew no bounds. On the particular Christmas Eve that I remember so fondly, Santa Claus in full regalia came to visit. My brother Dan must have been 3, I was 5. It was our family's habit to sit around the fireplace taking turns telling stories. The coziness on those winter nights I can never forget. There had been a light snow that year. The night sky was luminous. Our Christmas tree had been hauled into the house and decorated for at least a week. Though my mother was usually in the kitchen putting finishing touches on the feast to come, she had joined us at the fireside. My 4 older siblings, as well as Mama, seemed to have an air of hushed expectancy. Only in retrospect did I realize this. Danny Boy and I, perhaps for the 100th time, touched our stockings all hung in a row. Once more, we were assured that come Christmas morning, they would be filled. These stockings were our winter knee highs. In 1940, no fancy Christmas stockings were available. Without warning, there was a ruckus on our front porch, stomping and stamping, and a deep roar of ho, ho, ho filled the crisp air. Danny Boy and I dove into the comfort of our mother's embrace. We looked into each other's eyes, too frightened to speak. A loud knock, knock, knock at the door, and then our small farmhouse was filled with a larger-than-life figure. He was dressed all in red with white fur trimmings. His long, flowing beard almost covered his rosy cheeks. We were awestruck by his large black boots and his loud, deep voice. He was so powerful in the image that my brother and I could only bear tiny, reticent glances at him. "I came to see if you have been good children," said Santa in a strict voice. As he spoke, he tried to pass each of us a candy cane. We dared not respond, but closed our eyes and hid our heads in Mama's ample apron. Santa put his finger to the side of his nose and rose up from his squat. He disappeared through the front door. We heard the tinkle, tinkle of sleigh bells and Merry Christmas growing fainter and fainter. The grown-ups wanted to see what Danny Boy and I would have to say about this magical happening. Neither of us could speak. Finally, our mother called to bedtime. Our opportunity to respond was over. Many details of my father's shenanigans come back to me these 70-plus years later. He was often the butt of his own jokes. In his old age, his college-aged grandchildren would bring their friends to visit him just for the pleasure of hearing Daddy's fanciful tales. I know that in the scheme of things, my father would never make the cut of successful. He toiled relentlessly on our farm, my mother's inheritance from her Mayflower-era family. He loved inventions. Once he spent an inordinate amount of time on an anti-boll weevil contraption. It never worked. The play equipment he made for my brother and me was much more successful. We had a split oak swing, a seesaw, and a merry-go-round, or flying Jenny, that could take your breath away. When it snowed in South Carolina, we had barrel-stave skis and ski poles made of pine saplings. If I could speak to Daddy today, I would be able to say to him that the way he lived his life has been a blueprint for the way I live my life.
The stories presented on today's program were written and read by Glenna Lushai, Marilyn Farmer, Rachel Yawn, it was a reprise from 2013, Stephen DeLuque, and me, Chrissy Hewitt. This has been our annual December storytelling program, and the first half you can find in the KCBX archives. Ears on Art is produced here at the studios of KCBX, public radio for the California Central Coast. On behalf of co-host Stephen DeLuque, this is Chrissy Hewitt wishing you a most joyous season. As always, thank you so much for listening.